It's a new year. Actually, as I'm recording this, it's New Year's Eve. But by the time this airs, it'll be 2017. Woohoo! Hell of a week. Busy. Wonderful. Grateful. And I had the most expensive wank ever. It's my unconventional life. Governor. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. To front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? So yes, I banked my sperm. My little boys are snuggled up in their cryogenic beds, ready to come back to life and do the honest work of fucking one of them there over. Cost a little over $1,000, which is kind of a lot when I really have no idea when or how I'd ever use it. But if I'm getting on the testosterone cream like the doc says, better to save my best boys now before the factory lays off 3/4 of the workforce. I bet half of you have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. Had low testosterone for many years, been on meds that help raise it naturally but don't want to take them indefinitely, and they didn't seem to help with my libido. So now I'm going on the replacement cream, which can shut down your sperm production much in the same way birth control makes women temporarily infertile. Make sense? So I've had 3 sperm tests before. I think I've mentioned the last one on here at least, at a place in Irvine that was almost exclusively used by Asian Americans. So the porn they provided had a lot of monster bush and small reedy penises, so not really my cup of tea. But at least it had porn. Like the first time I ever got it tested, there wasn't any. And I had to desperately yank at the semi-flaccid father of thousands while I could hear some old lady in the room next to me complain about her swollen ankle. Worst wank ever. There's a whole story to that, actually, that I like to call Cuckoo Spitsu, but I think I'll save it for another time, if you ask nicely. And I suppose it wasn't much worse than my best friend Alan, who had a similar situation, but only had a page he'd ripped out of 50 Shades of Grey to inspire him, because he wasn't allowed any porn at home. Anyway, this time I'd actually given up porn for the last 6 months in an attempt to reset my libido. So while they had porn, I wasn't really sure if I should watch it. But I fell off the wagon. What can I say? Wanted to get as many of the boys out for business as possible. So I took my time and... Okay, this is getting weird. Did have a little help from my friends too, so to speak. Okay, enough. It was quite thought-provoking. All the questions you have to answer, though, like about your medical and sexual history, and it made me really think again about sex and who I want to have it with. Anyone? No, shut up. Only the nice, kind, and safe people. Okay, got weird again. So I got the results yesterday and they made 8 vials from it, which they said was twice the normal amount. Motility was good, even after freezing and thawing, and it all really put a smile on my face. And the best news of all, I'm STD free. Not that I had any reason to be concerned, but it's always nice to know and have it in writing. So there you go, girls. Oh, I love it. Bottom line is now I have some boys stored for if and when I ever need them. I suppose you never know when you're going to meet someone in the market for some quality British spunk. Very few repercussions after last week's admissions on the podcast. Could I really be living the sexually open life I've dreamt of, but people told me was impossible? I think you can be whoever you want, if you just own it, and not be afraid to let the universe put the people in your life that you need. Studying mindfulness has helped me a great deal, I'm certain, too. And not just in that world, in everyday life, every moment of the day. I was in line at the grocery store this week and got up to the register just as the lady in front of me pulled out a bunch of coupons and held up the line because the system wouldn't take them. And everyone behind me was huffing and puffing about having to wait and why were the other lines moving and why couldn't they be allowed in those lines. But I totally let it go and was instead thankful for the respite from having to do other stuff. I stood there in line with a genuine beaming smile at simply existing. I know how crazy that sounds, but it's as though over the last 3 months I found an almost euphoric utopia within my mind. Absolute joy. I don't know what to tell you. I couldn't be happier or more excited about the year ahead. The interview this week is with Andy again, and had one of the most profound moments and discussions of the podcast so far. One of the reasons I started it, in fact, was to capture moments just like this, like lightning in a bottle. It was something wonderful. So we are back with Andy. This time not in Griffith Park. We are in my apartment, so a little bit less wind and a little bit more of a comfortable ambient experience. Is ambient a word?
Not said that way.
No. I can get away with it though because I've got a British accent. So how are you, my dear?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. I'm being very good. I just got back from England. Had a wonderful time over there. It's been, 2 weeks now since we recorded the first interview, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
2 or 3 weeks. Has much changed in your life or not?
No. I haven't had tons of sex, but no. I have not, actually.
Oh, you're letting the side down. Wow. Well, the reason we decided to do a second interview is because after the first one, we had a chat for about 2 hours and realized there was a ton of stuff that we hadn't got in the first time. So we wanted to come back and sort of address some of those issues. Now, originally it was because, you know, we hadn't sort of divulged too much on the fun, interesting, sexy stories from being non-monogamous. But then, you know, thinking about it a little bit more and talking about it this afternoon over coffee, there were other issues as well, right?
Yeah.
So to start off with, I think the one thing that we didn't include last time was the fact that you are open in terms of your non-monogamy with your kids, right?
Yes, we are.
So you have 2 kids now, one's...
2 sons, one's 15 and one is 17.
17, that's mm-hmm. right, yeah, absolutely. And when did you... Well, at what age, because I should know this if I'm going to be a parent, at what age do kids start asking about that sort of stuff?
They didn't ask. We went to them, actually. I have my kids 50% of the time, so it was very easy for us to have our activities on the weeks they weren't with us. But it started to feel troublesome to me. I didn't want to be in a position where I would have to lie to them.
Right.
So I wanted to bring it up with them so they wouldn't think one of us was having an affair. They wouldn't see me on my phone to someone else or know that I'm going out, but I don't have that many friends. Who am I going out with, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I didn't want to...
So how old were they at this point when you just started opening up?
We opened up a year and a half ago-ish. Okay. So they were, you know, 14 and 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. We told them about 6 months ago.
How was that conversation? Was it like, hey guys, you need to sit down, this is a conversation? Or was it something that came up more?
No, it was a dinner. My kids and I are very open with each other about, well, I guess maybe I'm open with them, about all sorts of things, to the point of their embarrassment sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've always been one that if they have questions, they can ask, and then they usually have to tell me to stop, that I've explained enough, and then I stop.
Right.
So we were at dinner. And I said, you know, we need to talk to you. We we are at a point where our relationship is evolving into something else. Brad and I have decided to date other people and tell each other about it when we do. And it's an open relationship. And I think we talked for maybe 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. I told them that I date men and women, and my youngest son gave me a high five.
Yes.
And that was it. My oldest was like, that's cool, as long as you're happy. And that was
that's fantastic. Yeah.
So like, when I go out on a date, they know. It's really nice to be honest with them.
Yeah,
I wanted them to have the opportunity to know that there are other ways of having relationships. I didn't want them to get into their 30s or 40s thinking something's wrong with them because monogamy might not be working for them.
Right, which was how you felt?
Yeah. Yeah, I realized in the last year that at 19, I was very happy dating more than one person in college, not knowing what to call it.
Right. But were you happy if they were dating someone else as well or not?
Yes. And this is, I know this because I went to one of the people I was dating at the time. I had bought a book for him. I went to his dorm room, knocked on his door, and he said, come in. He didn't know it was me. And he was there laying down on the floor, like sitting on the floor with a girl. And he was a little shocked and embarrassed. And I was fine. It was like, cool. You know, I'm glad that you are. I'm glad you're dating someone else. And he got a little nervous and kind of chased me out the door. And I said, everything's fine. And I didn't know at that point that that was what this is.
Yeah. What happened with that relationship?
We dated a little, and then I met someone who I was then monogamous with, and I stopped doing that, but that only lasted a year.
Right.
Because I didn't know that it was okay to continue in non-monogamy.
Yeah. And with a lot of people, it's not, you know?
Right, sure.
It's difficult just to find people that are that sort of open-minded, I guess. I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I just talked to my sister. I did an interview for the podcast with her, and, you know, she was saying that nothing against my viewpoints necessarily, but just that certainly when it comes to being a parenting partner, that I'm really limiting my options to being a parent by saying that someone has to fit into all these boxes, which is what you said to me as well.
Yeah.
And that's the question as well when you're talking about non-monogamy, is how many people out there are really open to it in the first place. So as difficult it is to date in the normal world, if you were throwing those other sort of criteria, does it make it more difficult? Or are we perhaps at the verge of a new sort of epoch where this is becoming way more normal and accepted? I don't know. It's interesting. I think Sex and the City and shows like that kind of had a big effect on letting people know there are other options other than just the traditional finding one person and falling in love straight away, getting married and having kids, you know?
Yeah.
So you were married before?
Yes, twice.
Yeah. Now, the first time you were married, 10 years, is that what you said?
10 years, at 19, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I dated that guy in college for that year, and then I dove back into religion, I think out of fear of the unknown of my future. And in that...
Were you raised religious?
I was.
Ah, Catholic?
No, Pentecostal, charismatic. What? So it's like the...
Pentecostal charismatic?
Yeah, that's...
Is that a thing? It's like, yeah, Pentecostal, but you guys are really cool and get on with everybody.
No, it's like we wear makeup and we wear pants, but we still speak in tongues. And yeah, the look on his face right now. I'm no longer religious, but yeah, that's what I was raised in.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. So that's got to play with you as well in terms of feeling that you're non-monogamous and then having all of that religious side telling you the opposite,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think I was, what do you call it, kind of yo-yoed back deeply into religion after having this really sexual year with my boyfriend in college. And it was, you know, we were very free about it, and I think I freaked out because it was against what I was raised.
Right, but it took you 10 years for you to...
Oh, that, yeah, then yeah, 19, I went back into religion. He was someone I grew up in church with and married him. He was a pastor. That was his job, was working in the church and basically vice pastor, I guess, if you want to call
it
that.
It's funny, I've met a lot of people in, you know, sort of the non-monogamous community that had that sort of background.
Yeah.
Strongly religious background.
Yeah.
I never did. I mean, no, I went to
at school in England, you're raised sort of Church of England, which is kind of like regular church. It's just none of the bad stuff happens, so you don't read about the Old Testament or anything else like that. Jesus was... Basically, the Bible starts when Jesus is born. That's what I always used to think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. Yeah. But anyway, so we went to church maybe two or three times a year. I go for midnight mass, or no, not midnight mass. We call it the Christingle service, which was usually a couple of days before Christmas. And all the kids would go, and you'd get an orange with a red ribbon around it, and it had toothpicks stuck in it with, like, nuts and sultanas and whatever else. And the orange was the earth, and the ribbon was red, and it was the blood of Christ, and the toothpicks were... I don't know what they were, actually. I didn't pay attention because I was eating the sultanas by that point, I guess. But I liked it. I loved church, and I always felt as though... I don't know, it just kind of answered a lot of those sort of questions that you had. And it wasn't until I was 14 years old and I started having to study other religions at school that I started to go, huh,
yeah,
something's wrong here. Either all these things are wrong, or one of them's right and all the other ones are wrong, or this just isn't going to make sense, you know. And that's when I went through a really difficult time for about 3 or 4 years there. But that's by the by. So the point of the matter is, though, I had a very standard upbringing in terms of that. You know, I wasn't forced to be religious, but I wasn't told not to either. My dad was an atheist and told me that when you die, you turn into soil and that's it. So I didn't really think anything more of it than that. But I guess the point is, I think when you're pushed in one direction, like you said, in terms of religion, oftentimes there's a breaking point and then people come back on the opposite side.
Yeah.
Whereas I was always kind of middle of the road, and I am, aren't I?
Yeah.
Middle of the road in pretty much everything, right?
You've never had the tennis racket knock you one way or the other.
Yeah. And it is interesting because most people who are middle of the road never deviate, but you'd look at my world views as being quite a deviation from the norm.
From the norm, right.
But I wonder why. I wonder why most people who are middle of the road, take my sister for example, don't deviate that much and I do. I guess maybe I always saw myself as different. Maybe that was part of it. I don't know. But anyway, so you had 10 years married to the pastor and then pastor. That's it. No, I got it wrong again, didn't I?
Pastor is the food. I was not married to the noodle.
Pastor is the guy in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah, in England we say it the same way. Which leads me to my favourite joke my buddy told me. And I'm just going to tell it anyway. This cannibal comes home from work and his wife is cooking a priest. And the cannibal turns to his wife and says, "Oh no, not pasta again." Brilliant. Genius.
I laughed the first time, but I don't think
I... Yeah, the second time. All right. Anyway. But so, yeah, you're married for 10 years.
Yes.
Didn't work out. Did that end terribly?
Yes.
And did that make you second guess being in a serious monogamous relationship or marriage again?
No, I blamed it all on him being the wrong person.
Right.
That, you know, he was very controlling.
Yeah.
I knew walking down the aisle he wasn't right, but, you know, at that point, what was I going to do?
It's too late, isn't
it?
Yeah. Very few people can do that sort of graduate thing.
Yes, right.
See that scene from the movie, right?
Yeah. So, I think I said on the last one, 28 days later, I was in another marriage. After the divorce was final, I was in another marriage. And that was because I fell hard for someone, because I was so starved for a romantic love.
Yeah.
And the first time I felt an inkling of it, that was that.
Right. It's a strong, it really is a strong sort of desire, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? And I still feel that as well. And I think oftentimes people tell me, if you don't want a serious committed relationship with a girl, you shouldn't act that way. And this, I suppose, brings up the point of when you're in non-monogamous relationships, oftentimes they can become, I don't want to call them like booty calls, but maybe that's one way of describing them, but right. They can become perhaps less emotional than other relationships. And I don't want that.
Right.
I want a deep, loving, meaningful, emotional relationship with somebody, but I just don't want it to be necessarily exclusive.
Right.
Do you think that I'm wrong in acting that way or not?
I mean, no, I don't think you are, but I think it would be hard to find that outside of the polyamorous community. I'm finding they're the only ones that understand that you can have all of that and have it with other people too.
Right.
Because I am finding that a lot of times if I'm dating someone who is fine with non-monogamy and really enjoys that they don't have to have the boyfriend duties, as they say, it ends up just a series of booty calls that after a while hurts, because I would like to have some place other than just a booty call in their life, but they're not sure where that goes in their life because they're not completely on board with a fully non-monogamous, polyamorous type of life.
Right, which I guess points to the notion that often people have told me in the polyamorous community that you should only date people who are polyamorous, who feel that way already, but it's just so limiting, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's like dating in the same family almost. I mean, I've already run into people who have dated people that it's a little incestuous.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about that? Because it brings up the question, if you know people who are sleeping with your friends who are sleeping with your friends, or even if they're not, is there a time where you could be meeting somebody and you're going to be intimate with them, and they've been intimate with somebody else, like maybe the day before or even the same day? Does that ever become an issue or not?
I don't know that I've been told on the other side of that. I have had two dates that turn into sex in the same day. It didn't seem to be an issue with them, but I think at the time they were just ready to have it.
What do you mean?
It didn't seem to bother the second person, let's say.
So you told him and he was perfectly okay with it?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But by then we had had dinner and drinks and, you know.
You didn't tell him till after dinner?
No.
I love it.
And I should have probably, but it didn't, you know, at the time it was okay, I guess. But like, and maybe I've had the same situation but not been told. I don't know. But because I've been in the same room with another woman having sex with the same man, 30 seconds was maybe the time separation between the time she was kissing him and I was kissing him. So 48 hours is okay with me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there is no time for me because I've had that experience, I guess, is why it wouldn't bother me.
Right. But it's interesting, actually, because as I'm thinking about it, I don't know why, and maybe this is just a guy thing, but I see the guy as sort of like the breeder for diseases and stuff, right?
Okay.
And I don't know why exactly, but I guess it's the notion that sperm carries a lot of these diseases, doesn't it, or not?
Okay, think about it differently. This afternoon, if I had been with a woman,
mm-hmm.
in every way, my sloppy mouth all over her sloppy parts,
right.
Would that deter you from wanting to be with me?
Right. It's a lot less is the first
is
instinct.
It? Yeah.
Of course, it's first instinct before you even think about it.
Okay.
But if you rationalize it, you're 100% right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And perhaps even, and again, I could be wrong with this, I don't know, but perhaps with a guy, you're more likely to wear a condom and therefore less likely to transmit anything, whereas with a woman, you're less likely, right?
Yes.
Because you don't use dental dams.
Well, I haven't, but no, exactly.
Have you ever seen one?
I think in health class. Actually, no, in my sex ed class in college, she held one up and I was like, oh, that's what that is.
So, but let's say you wanted to buy one, where would you get one from? Because you can't buy them in Walgreens, right?
No, I don't think so, no.
Amazon?
I would love to go up to the cashier at Walgreens, though, and say, where are your dental dams? I don't want to do that now.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
They should keep them right beside the condoms. They really should.
If you were with a guy and he said, wait one second, and he got out a dental dam?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would want him to feel comfortable.
That's great.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's interesting, isn't
it? And I would also wonder what it felt like. It might be fun.
Right. It might be different, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are times I masturbate on the outside of the underwear because it feels different. So, you know, it might be an interesting experience and sensation.
Right. Something different, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of those? They have these strips, and I forgot what they're called now, but they're like, you know, the breath mint
strips? Like Listerine strips? Yeah.
but they're specifically for girls that don't like the taste of semen. And you put it in your mouth before you give a blowjob, and it masks the taste of semen.
Yeah, why would you do that?
I don't know. I guess some people don't like it.
I don't know. Like, well, then why are you swallowing if you don't like it?
Well, it's sometimes even, don't they get a little bit in beforehand? I don't know.
Oh, I've, the pre-cum.
Yeah,
okay.
I've never sucked a dick, so. Lord knows I've tried.
Okay, all right. No, away. I prefer to know what they ate the day before. So, I liked it. Anyway, next topic.
Next topic of conversation, right, yeah. But so it's not all fun and games, like you said. At the end of the day, there are emotions involved. And I think that's something that a lot of people have said to me, is that sometimes, whether you're monogamous or non-monogamous, there's issues in both situations, right?
Yeah, like I said before, like, it's fun to be the booty call at first, but if I feel like I'm investing something and I am not feeling that back, that they're investing anything but just sex, I guess it's because I use sex as my handshake. It's my first way of connecting. And then I expect things to evolve from there. And I think that it's misleading maybe to
absolutely.
Some guys. Yeah.
For most guys, for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe you and I are the exact opposite in that, right?
I think maybe.
You lead with sex. I lead with romance.
Yeah.
And we both want something more in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh, that's fascinating. So should I lead with sex? I don't think I should. I think I should be my authentic self.
You should, yeah. You absolutely should. It's disingenuous of me to not, unless I'm consciously doing it because I want to figure something out, which I'm starting to do because I am getting tired of just being the booty call. So I'm trying to figure out a nice balance of holding back a little bit and waiting to see if they're going to value me for more than just the sex, which is so hard because I would just much rather, I don't know, I'm just sexual at first.
Yeah, I mean, you did mention, though, that oftentimes, you know, when you've been with a new guy, it's really only two or three times and you sort of kind of lose that desire for them, right?
I do, yeah. And I think in those situations, because I realize that they aren't necessarily someone who's going to stimulate a connection beyond sex. I can connect easily with anyone sexually. Not everyone. There are certainly types that I'm not into, but I think I lead so quickly with it that then I figure out, wait, I don't really know what to talk to this person about. Or maybe I figure that they're annoying in some way. I'm not sure. Partly it's that. Partly it's that then I've gotten distracted with someone else.
Right.
But if there's someone I wanted to continue with, I make time for it, like I have with some people. So I don't think I've ever been distracted from someone that I would have gone back to had I not been distracted.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it kind of makes sense for sure. Some people would say that, you know, because you have that fear of being rejected or becoming just a booty call, that you cut yourself off before it could ever get to that stage. But maybe it's just chicken and egg, you know, like you're just feeling that this relationship is never going to be more deep and emotional, so you may as well not pursue it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like it's more of that. I think I'm self-aware enough to realize that I'm just not seeing it going anywhere.
Yeah.
That I just don't have that interest. I think the fear comes in when I have developed more of a connection and then I realize that there's not going to be any room in the other person's life for more than sexual afternoons.
Right.
You know?
Is it usually in the afternoon?
It tends to be, yeah, I think it does. Huh. A lot of times things work out after work, you know, between where I work and going home, or the weekend afternoons are better sometimes.
You fit it all in somewhere or other.
I have to. I am a working woman.
Right,
so.
Yeah. Not a lady of leisure.
No.
Like I am in December.
Yes.
Yeah, December to remember. It's going to be great.
I believe you'll have a good month.
I think so. I'm excited. So any of these sort of, I don't know, for me, I always hear stories. I hear stories about people like having wild, crazy sex parties or hooking up with threesomes or whatever else. And there's always a part of me that feels, oh, I've never done that. I kind of missed out, you know. But then maybe the reason I've never done that and I've missed out is because I'd never put myself in that situation, and maybe that's not who I really am. Or another way of looking at it is that I'm just a little bit scared and afraid, and because I am risk averse, I've never allowed myself to get in that situation. You obviously don't know me that well, but right. Given the fact that you've listened to my podcast now for half a year... What do you think? Where do you think I am in that sort of...
Okay, so the question is whether or not you just haven't been in the situation or you keep yourself from situations like that? Okay. I can't imagine in your previous job in the wrestling world that you didn't have that available.
I didn't.
Really?
Yeah. Because I wasn't on WWE... You know, I wrestled for smaller promotions.
But I have looked up your pictures. Oh, my. Seriously, you surely had two women at the same time who would have. Surely.
No. Oh. I mean, finding one woman was hard enough, to be honest with you. Hmm. And I may have perhaps been intimidating.
Maybe.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. My gimmick at the time was kind of a... Sort of a meathead soccer hooligan, so perhaps. Okay. I don't know. A lot of times when I hear these stories, there's drink and there's drugs involved, and I never really did drugs. I didn't drink much either.
Yeah, okay.
So perhaps that was part of it, and I never went to sex parties. Or...
I also think that, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's more myth that it happens so often.
Yeah?
I mean, we all know people who have had that, but... But maybe you didn't have the opportunity because it isn't actually out there as much as people say it is.
Yeah, I don't think it happens all the time. But if you ask 100 people, it seems to be, if I ask 100 people if they've had a threesome, I'd say about 75.
No, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I am surprised at that.
Maybe that's just the sort of people I hang around with.
Maybe.
I don't know. Well,
I'm
maybe.
Handicapped 10 years because no one in the church that I knew of.
Right.
That 10 years is lost to threesomes. I have no idea. My numbers may be skewed because my life was completely different.
Right.
So I don't know.
In your experience, is it worth doing once?
Yes.
Twice?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's worth, but the connection is not the same. If you really, really, if connection with that person is... primary to you,
mm-hmm.
It's not something that is a big deal that you miss, because for me,
right,
the connection wasn't there. It was purely physical.
Yeah, and I've had sex like that sometimes in the past, and yeah, it didn't really work for me. And yeah. I wanted to cuddle, and I wanted to, you know, hang out with them and talk and watch a movie and that sort of stuff, and they weren't that interested in it, and I was like, So definitely polyamorous, right? As opposed to just casual dating.
Yeah, I think so. I think you need more. I mean, from the sound of it.
And that's possible.
What's possible? What do you mean?
To have more.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I hear of people in these discussion groups, they seem to. I'm sort of waiting for that too. Waiting to see how... really actual true. I mean, I do have some connections, but it's not what some of these people talk about.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's lacking? I mean, of the guys that you're seeing now?
Well, they're not actually in the lifestyle. They're not in the polyamorous type of lifestyle. They are just men who are non-monogamous, but they haven't really embraced what that is. Like I said, it's like they're happy to not have boyfriend duties.
Yeah.
What
are boyfriend duties?
I guess they think, from what at least one of them said, they don't want to be the emotional support of the woman.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which I'm not really looking for anyone to be my emotional support. I would just like to know that you want to make time in your week for more than just sex. And I'm being unfair. I mean, a couple of them want to go out for dinner. They want to do other things too. But most of the time, they're completely absent until it's time for that date. You know, until they want a date. There's no communication until it's, hey, what are you doing? And, you know. And you know it'll lead to sex. And I sound totally different, I think, than I did 3 weeks ago, because it's been kind of an empty couple of weeks for me. And I've thought a lot about it and realized that, wait a second, these guys are only contacting me when they're ready for it.
Right.
And that's fine. And I'm good with that most of the time. But I think occasionally I would like to be a little bit important to someone.
Yeah. I can understand that for sure. Because I want to be someone's emotional support, you know? But that's why I've got so many friends, I think, because I don't know if I crave, but I really value that connection to other human beings. That's why I've got so many platonic friends, because that's the part that comes so naturally and so easily for me, you know?
Yeah.
I genuinely care about people a lot, and just sex is kind of the icing on the cake, I suppose. Well, at least it was when I had a libido. But it's coming back.
Yeah.
I got plans. It's all going to come back. December to remember. By the time this airs, actually, it's probably going to be January to... What rhymes with January?
You got me there.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I've got high hopes, so things will be good. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So fun stories.
Oh, fun stories. Okay, what do you want to know?
If you had to say, like, the top time you ever had sex, what was it?
Oh, my God.
Did I tell you mine? I did it on a previous podcast, so I'll limit it. But it was basically I was in Amsterdam with my ex-wife, and I ended up eating...
Yeah,
space bomb, and I lost my mind, and best sex I've ever had, without a doubt.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I felt like I had SARS. The next day.
Now, see, this is tricky because...
Let me ask you this. At what point did you decide that you were bisexual?
I think when I went back to college, I went in my mid-30s to finish a degree. And I started having crushes on these female professors. And I bonded with some male students in classes with me about these crushes. Like, we talk about these professors all the time, which I feel bad now, like, objectifying these women. But they were fucking hot and sexy because they were smart and all of this.
Right.
And that was sort of like, huh, I didn't know it felt that way. And then, actually, I have a coworker that... I've worked with for about 5 years, and I have a serious crush, and it's not necessarily physical.
Yeah.
I really like this woman who has no idea, I think, but she's a lesbian. She's married. She has a son, and she has a rocky relationship and sometimes relies on me to talk things out, and I like being there for her. Like, I really just like supporting her.
Yeah.
And I think that is when I knew that I could actually have feelings for a woman. It wasn't just a physical thing.
Right.
And then last June, when I signed up with OkCupid, I did it specifically to try to date women. I did some research, and it was one that was recommended as a good one for women to meet women. And I had my first female sexual experiences, bisexual experiences, I guess, with, my first with a woman was with a couple, and that was a lot of fun.
This wasn't something that you felt from a young age then, because a lot of people say their sexuality, they remember feeling that way when they were in their teenage years.
No, but I don't know if I allowed myself to even go there.
Right.
You know, with my... religious background, it was just not something I would have even entertained.
Right. And desires weren't that strong that they took over.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And as we know, you know, sexuality is a sliding scale. So you weren't that strong in that direction. But now you've dipped your toe in the pond, so to speak.
I have. And the problem is, I think the women I'm attracted to aren't necessarily attracted to me, and the women I was able to be with didn't completely ring that bell for me.
Yeah.
So I've sort of backed off, but,
right,
you know, would obviously be happy to try again.
Yeah, I was on OkCupid the other night, actually. It popped up a few times. You know, it pops up and says, so-and-so wants to meet you. Or is that Plenty of Fish? I can't remember which one it is.
I don't think it's OkCupid.
Yeah,
but
it must be
know.
Plenty of Fish. Yeah. But anyway, as I was looking on there, and there was a few girls on there that were just looking for other girls as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Maybe it was interesting. Because, you know, if you're a girl on there and you're attractive, you get inundated from guys, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same with girls or not? Do you ever...
No. No, it was few and far between.
Right.
Yeah. It was really, yeah, difficult to meet women. So that's also why I'm not on there either. It wasn't doing what I needed.
Right. So how did you meet that one girl, the first couple?
The couple?
Yeah.
Through OkCupid.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, she messaged me and told me about her and her husband, and it took me a long time to realize that she wasn't fake, that
right.
She was actually real.
Because she was attractive?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, very pretty. Well, very nice. Pretty, and then... Obviously, things are different when you meet in person.
Yeah, so, yeah, always, yeah.
But she and her husband were really cool, but then they started having kind of... I started to become uncomfortable being with them. I felt like they were having trouble, and I didn't know what that was about, so I backed off.
Right.
And she was clingy. She started to just text me all the time, and I couldn't take that. I think that's the part I don't like, is the clingy... that can come sometimes from women.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, perpetuate a stereotype, but the second one contacted me, and she was fun, and we met in a hotel.
Just you and her?
Just me and her.
Ooh, how was that?
It was all right. She,
nice.
She gave me a full massage and was very sensual.
Yeah, right.
Very sensual, and that was good. And then again, like, expected a lot of constant communication, and it wasn't there enough for me to continue.
Right. So it seems to be the universal theme here is just that sometimes it's difficult for two human beings to sort of meet who are on the same level in terms of what they want, in terms of a connection and communication, right?
Right, right. Because I suppose if you look at it from the other side, I was exactly to them what I'm finding men sometimes are for me. Like,
right.
I had this sexual experience and then I didn't want the rest.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm just getting what I gave.
I don't know. Like I said, it's just, perhaps it's just human nature and it's not necessarily the end of the world, you know, and you just got to accept that. And it's, as we were saying on the way here, it's not just sexual relationships, it's relationships in general. They have their ebb and their flow, and some people you meet and you go, you know what, we're going to be great friends and we're going to get on well, and in a year's time you don't even know where they live anymore.
Right.
And it's, how did that ever happen? It's just, I have a friend in England, and he used to describe life as being like on a train. You're in a compartment and there's various other people, and you might talk to some of these people, and some of them you get on well, and every now and again you pull into a station and you stop, and some people leave your compartment and other people get on, and that's just the way it is, you know. And
yeah.
So you miss some of the people that leave the compartment, and you kind of hope that some of the new people that come into your compartment are as nice, and that's it. And of course, some people who get into your compartment you become very invested with, like people you have kids with, for example. Right.
Yes, right.
Now, I am still waiting to find someone to have a baby with. And a lot of people have said to me that I should just think about dating someone who's non-monogamous and then see if that develops into wanting to have kids. What do you think?
I think you widen your pool,
right,
with that. I think you do limit yourself in just trying to find that person that you'll never be sexual with, that you'll only be platonic with,
right,
to have the child. I think you have to sort of, you have to widen your pool and then just be open and honest about this will evolve. It will evolve, and you can hopefully then find that person who is mature enough to have that same conversation and
yeah.
understand it and realize that that's natural.
Right, it is natural, and we shouldn't, like, take it personally, you know, and get upset about it, and just understand that this is human nature, this is how it works, right?
Yeah. And I know you've said, you know, adoption for a single man, is it pretty much impossible?
I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't looked into it. All I know is from talking to other people who have adopted it that said it was very difficult for them to adopt a kid as a couple, and thereby I assumed, well, wait a second, if I don't even have a partner and I don't have the financial ability to necessarily provide for a kid, I mean, I don't know how much it costs for a kid or whatever else, but I do feel as though I'm not in the place emotionally, financially, to raise a child on my own.
Okay, let's imagine that that it were easy, that you could do that.
Yeah.
Can you ever be open to it? I know that it the genetics part is a big thing for you, but let me just give you the situation.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm genetically linked with my father or not, but he is my father. 100%, he's my dad.
Yeah.
There's a long story behind that we can talk about or not, but I think when you talk about what you want to give your child, which is the experience of a happy childhood, the one that you had, it doesn't matter if they're genetically linked to you or not. I feel like there's so many kids who need that.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you'll ever get to the point to be okay raising a child that's not genetically linked.
Yeah, I suppose it depends how you look at the world in terms of destiny and stuff, right? I mean, if you did believe that things happen for a reason, then perhaps me not having my own kid could lead to a situation where I do become a parent for somebody else that really needs it, and I go, well, this was why. I mean, I don't necessarily see that things happen for a reason. I do think that things happen where opportunities come, and your life depends on how you make the most of those opportunities, for sure. Would I rule it out? No, I don't think so. I mean, a big portion of me wanting to have my own kids is the notion of continuing my genes, and that's not sort of selfish. I think that comes back to my notion of universal oneness. And when I look at my dad dying, for example, because I'm genetically so close to him, when he died, I didn't feel necessarily like he was all gone, because so much of him is me.
Right.
And therefore, having a kid of my own, I think I feel a lot more comfortable dying. I don't know whether that's a good excuse or reason to have your own kid versus adopting, is it?
I mean, if it's valid to you, it's a valid reason. You know, I can't judge that. But okay, my boyfriend, for instance, at 35, he told himself, you know, I haven't had kids, I am not going to start now. Just because he figured the woman he would be with would be of the same age whenever that happened, and the risks involved with an older woman having a baby, you know, increase, right? So he reconciled himself to not having kids.
Right.
He is, in all intents and purposes, stepdad to my two sons.
Yeah.
And only came into their life 5 years ago.
Right.
But he is their father figure. And they are so much better off and are better men already for having him in their life. He is a father, and he never expected to be.
Yeah.
And he was never a father to a baby. But my grandchildren will be different because he's in my son's life.
Yeah.
Because he has showed them what a father is. And he's been able to experience fatherhood that way. And he never expected to.
Right.
And I think it can come in so many ways that maybe if you take some pressure off yourself, you'll find that you'll be able to parent in one way or another that may not be what you saw or what you want, but it may be even more rewarding in the long run. This is just me spouting.
No, I think that's a beautiful, profound thought and realization, for sure. It does, and it speaks to how we are all so similar in many ways as human beings, and oftentimes we do try to compartmentalize the world and divvy it up between the people that we love in our family and our friends and everybody else, and that maybe we shouldn't do that, and that we're all equally in need of love and protection and support.
Yeah. I pictured this week children that don't get this good household or a good home or good parenting, and how good someone like you would be for a child like that that wouldn't get it otherwise. Yeah. But that is already alive. That that's a gift.
Right.
Anyway.
I know people who've adopted kids or at least have been foster parents for them.
Right.
For that exact reason. Now they've all had kids of their own.
Right, sure.
And then adopted it as well because they were so wonderful and loving. And maybe you're onto something. Maybe there's a way of doing that. Maybe I should start looking into it. Even if I never actually do it, what's the harm in looking into it and seeing how that would work?
You know, you could even, you know, look into a mentoring program.
Like Big Brothers, Big Sisters?
Yeah, yeah. Just to start giving yourself and maybe putting that out there in the world then gets you something back.
Yeah.
Not doing it for that reason, but, you know, if you just start looking outward more, maybe you'll find more coming back.
Right. That's a beautiful idea. Well, lost for words.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. That was really, really profound, really special. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Big brothers and big sisters.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah?
I think that you could really make a difference in some kid's life. And it wouldn't have to be forever.
Right.
But it could really change someone's life.
Yeah. And they, if it was a guy, he'd love that I was a wrestler, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could show him how to body slam people.
Yeah.
Do you want to change your previous comment?
No. Just be careful with that.
I am like a kid in many ways, but I think in the ways that it matters, I think I'm quite adult.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sweetheart. I really appreciate that. And I've had fun talking to you on here. I think this has been really, really helpful.
Good. Me too.
All right. Let's go and have a beer.
Let's do it.
I can't actually have any beers because of my reflux.
That's right. I don't like beer.
Let's have a couple of waters.
Yay.
So there it was. Kind of cool, huh? How lucky I've been to have been on this journey with all these wonderful people. And Andy is most definitely high on that list. She's my muse. Even if it never goes beyond today, it was a blessing just to have met her. Next week's interview is with Crow, my good friend from the Magic Castle in Hollywood. Always thought he was a lovely, kind, monogamous and vanilla traditional guy. Not there's anything wrong with that at all. But put simply, I was wrong. Well, only about the monogamous and vanilla bit. He is a lovely, kind fella.
Well, I've dated bisexual girls.
Right.
They normally don't bring home girls.
Bitches.
And at the same time, when they when they do bring home girls.
I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth. Another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.